Again, we're continuing our look at James, and today focusing on James 3, 1-12, which Duncan read out for us earlier. And James here is discussing the power of words, and as we saw on in the little clip after the reading, you know, that quite a good imagery of how far our words can spread, whether good or bad. And what James is trying to say is how that once we've said something, it can't be unsaid. You know, we can't put the feathers back in the pillow. And we now live in a world where our words can go far further than feathers on the wind can go. Much further even than when I was younger and at school. I mean, the only time you could sort of have bad words hurled at you was when you were face to face in a playground. Now it is much different to that. There was the old adage, you know, sticks and stones can break my bones, but words will never hurt me. I think there's nothing quite so untrue as that. It ignores the truth that actually, although there is no perhaps visible sign of injury from words, they can do incredible damage, far more than perhaps we often realise, and sometimes we don't even intend it, and it can cause great damage. James likens those words to a spark that can cause a terrible fire. We can all remember the damage that stray sparks caused in places like California or Australia. You know, it lasted for weeks and months, I think, even in some places. When I started considering this topic, I couldn't help but also think about a very recent book that's just been published by a certain Prince Harry. He's been doing the rounds of interviews and saying lots of things, and I think he's been hurt by things that have been said, but I'm not entirely sure this is the best way of dealing with it. His words are, and we're seeing it play out across the media, doing incredible damage as well. We live in a world where rather than, you know, the old sort of cowboy adage of shoot first, ask questions later, we now live in a world where the mentality of type first, ask questions later. Apps like Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, etc., allow us to comment about anyone and anything, whether we have the knowledge, the expertise, or even the politeness to do so. And sometimes our words, without knowing it or who is on the end of our words, can go right around the world. When James wrote this book 2,000 years ago, I don't think he ever envisaged how far our words could travel 2,000 years later. You know, and so somehow, you know, sometimes people sort of say, you know, the Bible, it's 2,000 years old, it doesn't have much relevance. This passage has even more relevance now than it did probably when he wrote it 2,000 years ago. James describes controlling our tongues as the idea of taming. So we got a dog about 8 months ago now, 6 months ago now. And we've been trying to tame her ever since. And most of the time, she's pretty good. But when she gets excited, there is nothing you can do that is going to stop her and make her listen. And I'm told that eventually ends at some point. And that can be for us, you know, when we get angry, frustrated, upset or hurt, that's when it can be very difficult for us to control what we say. You know, that's when all those emotions build up and suddenly we've said something we end up regretting. So I think it's important to think of some practical solutions to help us tame our tongues. Some helpful tools that mean that when we're in situations where it is difficult to sort of think clearly, we can perhaps not say what we might have once said. How many times have we all thought, oops, shouldn't have said that? I didn't mean it quite that way. Or I really shouldn't have written that and press send. often if we simply take just a few more seconds to think before we opened our mouths, so go on to the next one, brain before mouth, if we think a little bit more before we open our mouth, then we can cause much less hurt. You know, rather than spurting out the first thing that comes into our minds, perhaps if we think, we can say things that build someone up rather than tearing them down. Paul says in Ephesians 4:29 that we should use our words to build people up. By thinking about what we say, we can say things that are constructive, that are helpful, that build somebody up and brings them closer to God and ourselves closer to God in that, for that matter. Secondly, one more fact. We've all done it. Well, I certainly have. You get cross and frustrated when you've messaged someone and they don't respond. You've tried to ring someone and they haven't answered. And you're like, why are they ignoring me? Perhaps we need to find out that one more fact. It could be that their phone's died, that they're away on holiday and we didn't realise it. So rather than getting upset with them for something that is completely outside of our control, perhaps we just need to find out that little bit more information. You know, perhaps we need to check what somebody's saying when we see a post online. You know, there may be something before it that we haven't actually read before we start charging in all guns blazing and causing chaos. We can, by doing this, we can avoid causing upset and anger, which can only then potentially exacerbate the situation. If we just make sure that we have all the facts before we leap in, then perhaps we will not cause quite so much trouble. And the final thing to bear in mind before I go on to the next little bit of this is always be full of grace. I often tell our children, and there's two of them sat here, so they're going to be really cross that I pointed them out, to try and give people the benefit of the doubt. Because we often say things, and we can choose to take it one way, or we can choose to take it the other way. And often, it wasn't meant to cause offence. You know, I'm terrible for this. I always want to win the argument.
Oh, you are.
I am. Oh, yeah. Normally, Steve, it's because I'm right. If we try to be full of grace at all times and give people the benefit of the doubt, then we'll often avoid hurt on both sides. A few days after Jesus died and rose again, he's on a beach with Peter. And a situation that must have been very weird for Peter. Here's Jesus risen again, and 3 days earlier, you've just denied ever knowing him. It would have been very easy, I think, for Jesus to have said, "Yeah, you're no good, go away." He doesn't. He forgives him, and he encourages him. And then what do we see? We see the great things that Peter achieves in Jesus' name. You know, that encouragement, that those good words that are used in that situation bring Peter back as a disciple of Jesus, and he goes on to lead the church across the world. As Paul says in Colossians 4:6, let your conversation be always full of grace, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how to answer everyone. When we read this chapter of James, I think it's very easy to get caught up in the fact that it's quite vivid hell and brimstone language. You know, I read it and I often think of a Welsh preacher in the early 19th century. And I think it can be quite negative, you know, that, oh, we should just shut up because we're just going to cause trouble if we say anything. But actually, there's a flip side to it. If our words can do so much damage, if they're not considered and well thought out, equally, they can do great good if they're considered and thought through. If we speak with care and love and consideration, we can help people do and do great things ourselves. We can set a fire in a good way. I can't remember which song it is, but it says there's a song that we sing, "Let a fire burn in me." So fire isn't always bad. So we can build each other up in faith. Our words can create a fire in people that is for good, not bad. Words can be written that benefit people and show them the right path. We can use our language to set a fire for God. And just as destructive fire spreads, as we saw in that clip a few moments ago, the fire in Australia, or didn't see, more to the point, you know, the good news can spread far and wide if we use the right words. And we're really lucky. Unlike Harry's book, which is full of bitterness and dubious stories, we have a book that's full of words of love and encouragement and help. James writes this book that's there to help us. Like Steve said right at the beginning of this, it's a pretty much an instruction manual on how to be a Christian. You know, it's probably one of the most practical and least ethereal books in the Bible. It's just do this. It's brilliant. And that's what he's saying. He's saying, don't shoot first, ask questions later. Think before we speak. He warns us of the damage that we can do with ill-considered words and encourages us to speak with love. In the last bit of the chapter 3, the last bit where the message puts it quite well, and it says, you can develop a healthy, robust community that lives right with God and enjoy its results only if you do the hard work of getting along with each other, treating each other with dignity and honor. And as we are a people that talk and communicate in various different meetings, to treat each other with dignity and honor means to talk to each other politely, to be kind and considerate in all that we say and write and type and all the rest of the mediums that we now have for communication. So although it is easy to dwell on the first part of how dangerous our words can be, I think it's really important that actually we don't stay silent because of that, but rather see the positives and the good that what we say and can do. So as I finish, and before we go into some more worship songs and communion, I've got a prayer. Dear Lord, please help me control my tongue. I want to respect you and others with every word that comes from my mouth. I ask for patience and self-control in every conversation I have. Please also help me to be aware of what I listen to and participate in. May I glorify you in all that I say and do. Lord, give me wisdom and discernment in every conversation. I have to speak with grace to build people up and draw them closer to you. Amen.